Dalian?
Well, hello?
No
yeah, I think
worries.
We need to wait for the intro. Never mind. Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and I'm pleased to have back as my guest, Mada Dalian. Today we are interviewing her on her book, In Search of the Miraculous Healing into Consciousness. And this is the recipient of 6 book awards, the Living Now Best Book of the Year. And it actually is one of the best books that I've ever read on enlightenment. I think it's just a really great book. With very time-proven spiritual principles. Mada Dalian was born in Armenia and immigrated at the age of 24 to North America, and she studied under the mystics Osho and I can't pronounce this really well. This formed the basis of her spiritual education, but she has gone on to really have a lot of profound experiences, a powerful awakening at the age of 33, and then basically put it all together, her own personal experiences, which are so important in spiritual development. It's not enough just to read about it. You actually have to experience it. And she put it together in a great book called In Search of the Miraculous. Welcome, Mada. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks very much for having me, Dr. Cole.
So, why don't you give the listeners a little bit of your background, including what your spiritual awakening was like, because a lot of people, they have different experiences, of course, but I think you describe yours very well.
Yes, just like our journeys are all different and we learn different things along the way. In some sense, we're all made of flesh and bone, and blood runs in the same way, so everything is mathematical in our bodies. But our journeys, the experiences that we have along the way, are different based on, obviously, our spirit's likes and dislikes and what we consider to be important. And for myself, I think I've been a seeker for a very long time, many lifetimes. And in a way, once we live our life and have so many different experiences, sooner or later, we all come to the question of who am I, what am I doing here, and why am I here, where would I go when I die? Because death is such an important awakener in a way that puts the perspective of our life into a more clear picture, so that we realize that everything we're taking for granted actually is sooner or later going to be taken away.
Right.
And that's what happened for me as well when I was little. I was 5 years old when I saw my grandfather die. And that gave me the perspective of seeing that I'm going to also one day die. And I felt like the most important thing would be for me to know who I am. And that sort of created the backdrop of the journey, in the sense of it kept the fire burning, so to speak, even though I forgot about it for a time being, where we go into the world and we go through education system and we learn things that we're supposed to be learning. But then we always come back to what our spirit, what our soul really is here to do.
Mm-hmm. So basically, one of the things in the book, you talk about different, different phases that you go through during the search. But at some point, you do have to consider about how you die. And that's something Gandhi had talked about that a lot, that when you, I guess, and some of the other major religions do too, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and there's the Buddhism section of, you know, that how you die is so important. Do you want to explain that a little bit, that it's, that you have an opportunity at the time of death to raise your energy as high as it will go? Is that, that's how I understand it. Is that?
Yes, but it's all still predicated on how we live, because how we die is how we have lived our life. And obviously, if we have lived our life in fear, then when death comes, we're going to die in fear. So that's why the lifetime that we have is such a great opportunity for us to transform the fears, which are basically coming from the, our unconsciousness. They're coming from our from us not seeing that those fears are all related to the ego. And in a sense, of course the ego is afraid to die, because enlightenment means you, the ego dies and you find who you truly are.
Right,
and that, those are the fears. The fears related to the ego are the fears of being rejected, a fear of being alone, fear of being criticized, fear of needing to fit in, fear of making mistakes. All these fears are to do with the ego, and to do with the child not knowing that all the answers are inside. And I'm saying the child specifically because, in a sense, children are born knowing, they're so in tune, but then we forget as children that, as a matter of fact, we have all the answers and all we need to do is know how to look inside, but then our parents are lost, our teachers are lost, because, you know, till we grow up and then we have to seek and search and then we have to find teachers who have broken through that veil of illusion of the ego, and that's why this journey becomes difficult, and it doesn't have to be. We can actually do this whole thing, give our children the opportunity to start seeing that they have all the answers, and they are strong, and they're unique, and they don't need to be afraid to make mistakes, and then we have such a more kind and loving and, you know, happy environment for all of us to live in.
The one principle that is taught in a lot of the spiritual disciplines is that the observer is very important. The idea that you are who you are at your core from the time you're born to the time you die and the time between lives, you still are the witness to everything that's happening, and that can never, that's eternal, and that can never be taken away.
That's exactly the whole work of spiritual seeker, is to develop that ability to observe.
Right.
And once we can observe, obviously through observation, we can disidentify from the parts of the ego that we believe to be true.
Right. So one thing I did in my spiritual development was do flashcards in my mind. And so each flashcard had a different fear on it. So I would bring it up, I would look at it, and then I would accept it if it was to happen in my life, you know, whatever, you know, loss of somebody, my own death, bankruptcy, you know, whatever. And then I would accept it, that it would be fine if it happened, and then I would throw it away. So it was a process of, I guess, that witness, looking at every fear that the ego might have and then accepting it. Because, I mean, it really, it's not the worst thing in the world to die. It's not the worst thing in the world to go bankrupt. I mean, probably, in my opinion, because I'm a physician, one of the worst things in the world is to be in horrible pain that nobody can get you out of, you know, for a long period of time, you know. That might be a lot worse than death, you know. So that's the kind of thing that, you know, you can always think of something a little bit worse, so you can throw it away and say, well, it would be okay if it happened.
Yeah, well, pain and suffering, obviously we don't like to see somebody in pain and suffering, and we ourselves don't like to be in pain and suffering, but also at the same time, pain and suffering, they're there for a reason.
Right.
And in my experience, there's always lessons behind why a person experiences, for example, physical or emotional pain. It's all connected with what's unconscious in them and what needs to be transformed.
Right.
And once we can work with that, and again, through working with my system, with my method, I've seen people who've been in chronic pain, but then the pain just automatically disappears and transforms once a person learns the lesson behind that pain. So what is the body saying to them? And and the body is like just a container that contains all our experiences. It contains all our thoughts, all our emotions, every single experience we've had, every single belief we've developed throughout our lifetime, and some patterns move on to previous lifetimes. And basically that container also has a lot of our whole history, and in that history, when we repeat unconsciously the same thing over and over again, so then, of course, after a while, if you keep stuffing the container and we're not able to surrender and let go of things because of fears, and we're not breathing properly, then what happens is, of course, the body is going to give all sorts of pain. It's going to give all sorts of illness that... It's just the energy says, well, you know, I'm choking here, so I can't hold it anymore. You do something.
Right.
And unfortunately, go ahead, sorry.
Go ahead, I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
Yeah, what I was saying is that unfortunately, medications can probably provide us some temporary relief, but the causes, they cannot deal with the causes of those unconsciousness. The person needs to deal with themselves. They have to take the trouble to look inside and start discovering those things that they're unconscious of.
Yeah, I want to give an example here. Carolyn May says you wear your wallet in your lower back. And several times I've been in surgery and my technician has complained, different technicians have complained of low back pain, and usually they're young, healthy people with no reason to have low back pain. And I say, well, did you lift something or did you have an accident? They say, no. I said, well, Carolyn May says you carry your wallet in your lower back, and they look at me amazed and go, yeah, my boyfriend ran up my credit cards and now they're calling me to collect money, you know? So the point is that a lot of illness. Now, you can give them pain medicine for this back pain, but until you actually treat the cause of the pain, which is, you know, fear of financial failure, that back pain is going to be there.
Well, I would go even further. I would say it's a fear of survival, and it's a fear, and that fear of survival is based on not trusting.
Right.
So what we need to work with is, first of all, see why don't I trust that I'll be taken care of? Why am I afraid of my survival? And if we live with the fear of survival and not trusting ourselves, how can we be creative? How can we trust that existence is there supporting us?
Right.
So the whole work for me, if a person's really wanting to live in abundance and find their creativity, because everything in existence is mathematical, we get back what we put out. And if we're putting out fear and fear of survival, we're shrinking our energy. Of course, it's going to be painful because energy is not moving. Again, it's mathematical. And if we're trusting and we can take risks and we can say, well, I'm not afraid to make mistakes because I'm going to learn through them, so let me discover, let me explore. This is what children do. We should, as adults, we should be doing more and more of that. Then energy flows, and when the energy flows, there is no pain.
Right. And you can also, there are a lot of ways to have money come in that you might not know about or even think about. So that's the other thing, is in the limiting thought belief, thinking that the only money that's going to come in is me working a job, you know, my salary, and that's it, and nothing else can come in, then you set up that framework. Whereas if you say, you know, I trust that the universe will help me with this financial need because I've learned not to give my boyfriend, who's financially irresponsible, my credit card, you know, like that was the lesson, obviously, that, you know, that you have to be more discerning of who you let in your life. But, you know, then you can let, once you learn the lesson, then you can have the money flow into your life through all sorts of different ways.
That's true, but at the same time, if we take that further, if we look at the collective conditioning that says, unless you have money, you cannot be happy, and this is a complete falsity, because you can be very happy without any money. I've been in that situation when I was seeking and meditating, and I basically let go of all my education, a career. It was not important for me. For me, it was I'm going to focus on most important is I need to know who I am, and with very little money, I was happy. I lived in India for 4 years. And whatever money I would earn, it was like, that's the direction I'm putting in. And it's, money's not going to buy me happiness. Me finding who I am is going to really find that happiness that nobody can take away. I cannot lose it because, you know, that's what happens many times. People have a lot of money. Suddenly, you know, they lose their money and they go commit suicide. Well, money's not buying people happiness. And that's another misconception. It's a very social, deep social conditioning. And that's another thing that people need to look at and work with. Because really, if you step outside, you look into the sky, you know, everything is abundant. It's all our beliefs. They're so limited and all our conditionings is what creates the problem.
Right.
Natives here in North America, they lived very happily. They didn't have any money. You know, so everything is there, everything's provided, and the joy that for example, nature can give you, that trust in the unknown can give you, no money can buy that. And, you know, no money can buy love. So those things, or self-confidence, these things don't come with money. And that's the problem. Many people don't see that they've been conditioned, especially in North America, that unless you have money, you cannot be happy. So everything has depths and layers of depths, and they need to be explored in order for us to see. There's a story that I'm just reminded of there, that when British were building railway in India, this foreman kept seeing this Indian man come and sit under a tree and keep watching what they're doing, like with the building. And so he thought maybe this man is looking for a job. So he went and said, you know, if you want a job, you can come and work. And the Indian says, so why do I need to do that? And the foreman says, well, if you earn money, then you'll be, you know, you can buy things and you'll be happy. And the man says, but I'm already happy. I'm sitting here watching you work and enjoying the sunshine.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
You know, so there's so many, it's just we're not taught to start exploring things in a multidimensional way. And if we start doing that, this is precisely what this book was about. That's why it took me 7 years to write it, so that I create a very in-depth and step-by-step process so people have an education and understanding to what is this journey that we're on. Because sooner or later, we're going to have to say goodbye to everything. We cannot take money with us. Alexander the Great dying said, I'm dying empty-handed. We cannot take people with us. We cannot take anything with us except what we have experienced through our lifetime, what we have become conscious of, and the joys and the awarenesses that we have gained from what life was able to offer us. And instead, what we do, we try to shut life away. And it's like, oh, you know, I don't want to go there. I don't want to feel this. I'm scared to do this. And we miss the whole opportunity that life gives us in so many ways.
You talk about the veil of illusion in Chapter 7, and there's three layers, the personal, collective, and cosmic. Would you like to explain that to the audience?
Yes, of course. The personal veil is basically our personal unconscious, which is based on all the experiences that we've had in our personal journey. For example, you know, if we've experienced a trauma, then based on that experience, we've made a conclusion that this is scary, or this is bad, or this is good, and I don't want to do that anymore because this would happen. So that's those experiences go into the unconscious, and we don't want to look at them because we don't want to feel them. But the thing is, we need to look at them because every experience teaches us something. And the moment we learn the lesson, then that experience is no longer needed. That belief is automatically dissolved, and we can move on to the next experience. Now, every experience will make us stronger. Sometimes people, when I'm working with my method with people, they come and they've had, you know, traumatic experiences and very painful experiences, abuse, etc. And the first reaction is the ego feels, I'm a victim. All these things happen to me. But when I work with people, once they start going into the unconscious and seeing the lessons, what happens is they realize that this happened so that I could learn to stand up for myself. Right. And so that I can discover I have the power. The moment people see that, and it's an immediate, because once consciousness comes in, it's immediate. You immediately see that, as a matter of fact, I'm not a victim. I have the power, and this thing happened so that I can see this. And instead of blaming and seeing myself in as a victim, now I see myself as actually I have all the strength and all the possibilities, and I can create my life the way I want. And that's what I call transformation. And this is what happens. I have to mention that, you know, we can't do these things with our mind, because the mind creates the beliefs. So that's why, you know, when I talk about the In Search of the Miraculous book, I just can't help but also speak of the healing systems that I created, because they're very connected. It's the practical way to go into those beliefs which are in the body, and the beliefs are created by thought forms. So a belief is simply a thought. I cannot do this. It's a thought form. And it's in the body, and it's based on some experience. So once we work with my system, we go into the whole body, working from feet all the way to the top of the head, and we access those beliefs, those thought forms. We release them. Once we release them, they're like clouds being released. Suddenly, the person connects with their inner consciousness. And in that consciousness, already you see the lessons. You don't have to think, what are my lessons? You immediately see them. In that seeing, you become aware that all these things that happened to me, they happened for a reason, so I can now truly forgive and let go. And with that, you go more into your heart and feel grateful to your parents, to the people who have been who haven't been nice to you, and to yourself. You feel grateful to yourself that I have the intelligence to learn these lessons, and I feel good about myself now. And I can now go into my creativity and find what is my soul wanting to live and wanting to do here, because all these fears that were holding me back are no longer there.
And that is all within the personal
unconscious.
Realm, is that right?
That's right. So that's the person. Thanks for bringing me back.
Well, no, I mean, I thought that's, it was. Yeah,
that's the personal. Now, within that journey of looking in and doing this work, then we come across the layer, and we have to, there's no escape to that, on the journey, we see the collective unconscious. The collective unconscious is those beliefs that are set in the collective by religions, by institutions, by status quo, by political regimes.
Right.
And very often people don't understand that those regimes have their own agenda. It's just like when we're working on ourselves, suddenly we realize, oh, this person actually is manipulating me. Right. So that's part of the learning. The same way, the collective unconscious is when you start realizing that I'm being manipulated. All these beliefs that that are being taught to me, have been taught to me since my childhood, are part of that collective unconscious through which I'm being manipulated to fit the status quo, because the status quo wants me to behave in a certain way.
Yeah, like what would be the belief in terrorism? You know, we didn't have that when we were young. I mean, we had the Cold War, which was a whole different thing. That was the collective belief that the whole world could be annihilated at any time, which, you know, was actually a little bit scarier than the terrorism thing, because the terrorism thing isn't so, you know, it doesn't involve the entire world. But it would be that our political system wants us to believe that we're inherently unsafe if we go to the school, if we go to the mall, you know, if we go on an airplane. Everything's inherently unsafe, and we have to give up our personal freedoms in order to have safety. That would be the collective.
Exactly, and media does that every day.
Right.
Media basically gives you feeds you the thoughts that they want, or the forces behind the media want you to start believing in. So then, to break through that, obviously we need to break through that to understand that, as a matter of fact, this is just another game that is being played in front of me, and I need to discern. It's up to me to discern what's the truth and what's the false.
Right.
In what I'm hearing. So that would be the collective unconscious. And the collective unconscious also, part of it is our parents are victims of the same. They come from their time of their conditionings in their time, because every time brings its own collective conditioning in a way.
So yeah, my parents went through the Depression, and I think that had a very, very difficult imprint on them, and like their parents and my parents would save and save and save and not spend money, you know, to have it for in case there was another depression, and yet, you know, they died with a lot of money, you see.
Yeah.
But they really should have spent the money when they were living in order to live. That's what I would, and I think that
was a great
the imprint
example
of the Depression. The Great Depression, right?
Great example, because that's exactly what many people, how many people live, and they don't see that it's actually a belief based on an experience that I had.
Right, right.
And that's how, the moment you see that, you break through that conditioning, and then you say, okay, well, you know, I'm working hard, so I'm going to also enjoy it. I'm not going to think for tomorrow, because, again, that's another fear. It's a fear of survival. We're coming back to sphere of survival again, right?
Yep.
And people had to do those things because that was their experience. They saw that. But the thing is, they pass on those beliefs to their children. You indirectly get it because the same way it's you know, my parents went through the post-war. I was born post-war. So obviously they had that whole experience. And, of course, part of their beliefs I had to work with, I had to look at to see, like, oh my God, it's my parents' beliefs that I'm believing. So
yeah, I'm sure your parents never went off for 3 years on a spiritual quest and didn't work. You know, I mean, didn't work a regular job and a career. You know, that would be something that would be very foreign to their world.
Absolutely, and because the main thing is what for every parent is to feed their children.
That's right. Yeah.
So, and that's why, that's what the forces manipulate. They manipulate that to keep people enslaved and basically just worrying about their survival, because that's
survival,
the only way
that
people can be manipulated.
That's true. That's very true. So that's the collective, and that's like religion, government, your family, your extended family. Have, because some families have much stronger belief systems that are there. Other families are a lot looser, you know.
Yeah.
They're not, a lot more accepting.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, I think in general society has become more accepting. For, you know, back in my parents' time,
You know, if you were a woman, you either became a nurse or a teacher. You know, those were the choices. And then you were expected to raise your family. And of course, the people were expected, if there was a war, the men were expected to go to war. You know, it was just very, very structured, I would say.
Yes, and if you really look around now, similar things are happening. It's like history repeating itself.
Mm-hmm.
We're just at the brink of another possible war, and hopefully it doesn't happen. But it's been played exactly the same way. The thing is, because of the media, the technology, now there's more information. So therefore, people are able to then do their own research and come to their own conclusions and not just blindly follow what somebody else tells them. And that's a great progress already right there. So the evolution has happened. But then if we look at some other countries, you know, where women are, you know, their fight to get the women to be able to drive. So, you know, so there's so many different this planet is so multidimensional with the kind of consciousness level of people that inhabit it. And what was before, you know, 100 years ago still is happening in some parts of the world.
The world, right.
So it's still there. We're still in evolution. But now coming to the third level, third layer of the unconscious that we must break through is to understand. And this is where we come to really understand the oneness. And the third layer of unconsciousness is to see that we have had not just one lifetime, but many lifetimes. And one of the lifetimes, or many more than one, has been living as animals, as trees, as rocks. We go through so many experiences, because even a mountain, one day dies, it just crumbles into sand.
Right.
The ocean, that we see the ocean, then, you know, the earth changes happen, and where was the ocean becomes a desert. So all these experiences are part of the one universe. And the cosmic unconscious, it's basically to understand, once we break through the cosmic unconscious, to understand that we're only here on the planet experiencing it, but we're also influenced by everything around us, including the stars. And not only influenced, but the history of the universe, there's no beginning, there's no end. So we don't know where, on this planet, in the beginning when the planet could sustain life, there were only animals. And then humans appeared, and there were only few. And then now it's 7 billion. So where all these people came from? Where all these souls got incarnated from? So obviously the universe is full of them, and now scientists say there's at least 50 other planets that can sustain life.
Probably a lot more than that.
I'm sure a lot more than that in the universe, but in this solar system that they have discovered.
Sure. Yeah,
so then, which means, and some people, like breaking through those cosmic layers, so you start recognizing that actually I'm just visiting this planet Earth, and there's some people, you know, can feel it. I've come from another planet. This is like, I'm just passing through here for some experiences.
Well, most of us right now come here for the ascension. You know, this is the big, the big show in town right now is the ascension, because we have a whole bunch of different extraterrestrials watching this because of what the planet's about to go through. And so I think that's why there's so many souls on the planet right now, because of what's about to happen.
Well, but don't go too far. Some of us right here living in the physical form are extraterrestrials.
Light workers probably are, definitely. That we have had multiple lifetimes on other planets.
Exactly. But, so what we're doing together here is exactly that work.
Right. Right.
Right.
So we've done other ascensions. I mean, I think that this isn't the first one we've done. We may not remember them, and it might be, you know, it might be fun to remember them sometime. But it certainly is a unique time in history, and one where we're about to be introduced to our cosmic family, which after ascension we'll be able to be so less fear-based that we'll be able to enter a galactic community. That would be so much fun.
Yeah, but also what really needs to be very clearly understood here, Susan, mm-hmm. is that it's the ego can make any sort of like a nice story not to feel mm-hmm. the reality of uh-huh. the being. But ascension, to me, is when you find your being. And you see the ego mm-hmm. as ego, and you say, okay, this shell is no longer needed. It's like the flower. The seed of the flower is in the shell. Now, to mm-hmm. become a flower, you can't keep the seed. I mean, the shell.
Right.
Right. So the shell must be let go of. So to me, mm-hmm. the true ascension is when a person starts doing their inner work and recognizing that this is the ego, this is me. My being, mm-hmm. this is my consciousness, these are the parts of the ego. So if I can see the ego as such, then I can see that I don't need to compete, I don't need to be right or mm-hmm. better than somebody else. All I need to do is be myself and not allow anybody else to interfere in the way I choose to live my own life. Mm-hmm. That's the true ascension to me. And in order to get there, we cannot look outside. We need to look inside. Because ascension yeah. happens inside, not outside. And if we hope that somebody else from outside is going to come and save us, we're missing the boat again.
No, I don't think that. I just think that, we're all on our ascension journey, probably since the harmonic convergence. I mean, that's where things started really popping. So many of us are on the same path. But we are on the path that is helping the planet ascend. So that's the one I'm talking about. I'm talking about the collective ascension. I mean, individually, any of us can ascend at any time. You know, your book talks about that. Your book talks about enlightenment, which is essentially ascension, and that's a journey that is personal. But with so many of us here at the same time, I'm talking about the energy coming in from the galactic center that's causing an increase in cosmic rays. The scientist says they've never seen so many cosmic rays ever. In fact, they're worried about health issues because of them. So we've got an energetic situation on our planet right now, which is going along with our personal ascensions, but it's a planetary ascension. So this is a very unique time. Yes, the personal ascensions are happening, but there's a planetary ascension which is encompassing everything.
Well, you know, on that note, the epilogue that I wrote in at the end of the book I don't know if you remember it or if you read it, but this was in 1990 where I had the vision where the planet, that there was consciousness on this planet, mm-hmm. and there was like a ball of light that contained basically, the ball of light represented the energy of all the awakened beings.
Right.
And it was surrounded by that cosmic darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And that light was actually just like almost hovering over the mm-hmm. planet. Now, what happened is within very short time, with the speed of light, all these light streams started entering this light ball of all these awakened beings. And mm-hmm. suddenly the light ball became a lot larger very quickly
mm-hmm.
because of all the light streams entering through this light ball, the main sort of source of light. And mm-hmm. each stream, as you would enter it, the personal eye, the ego eye was disappearing.
Right.
And what happened there was a moment where everything was in a standstill. And what was happening now, the darkness, the forces of unconsciousness, were there was like a fighting going on. Who's going to win? Who's going to, you know, take mm-hmm. over the light or the unconscious darkness? And of course, right. there's the battle. And at that moment, in that standstill, it was like the scale. If you look at the scale, it was almost like the scale was imbalanced. It was equal, and mm-hmm. it was like, okay, now who's gonna take over? And mm-hmm. the last in that last second, there was one light stream that was almost forcibly pulled into the big ball of light, mm-hmm. and that one last light stream made the difference, and it tipped the scale.
Yeah,
so for me, when I had that vision, it was like I was very hopeful when I saw it, that mm-hmm. you know, that I know where we're headed. So this is going to be the Age of Enlightenment is going to materialize.
And you know, the time you were writing this book was the time of not only my personal awakening, but so many other. Again, it was right after the harmonic convergence. It's very interesting. That was a very important time that then the light workers or the people that came here to help with the ascension started to wake up and started to write books and started to do my radio show then.
Yeah.
So, you know, Temple of Health has been around since about the early 90s. So, you know, the whole thing is we're all on our journey, and yet each one of us is working toward the same planetary, ascension.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're all part of it. We're all very much part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because we're all vehicles, really. We're all vehicles to the greater force that force is the force of evolution.
Right.
And evolution must happen. It cannot be prevented. It cannot be stopped.
And well, we're talking spiritual evolution, not Darwinian evolution.
Well, spiritual evolution, but just evolution, period, in the whole universe. Mm-hmm. Because whatever species are in the universe, they evolve as well. Human beings are very rare species. The way I look at humans, we're just, you mm-hmm. know, those species with consciousness that mm-hmm. that have so much power to materialize, create, and destroy.
Mm-hmm.
And if we look at animals, they're different species, but they also have some level of consciousness, but they have limitations. They cannot mm-hmm. do what we do.
Right.
So, there must be other species that don't need to incarnate into physical forms. And
there are. The angelic realms.
Yeah.
And the devic realms, yeah.
That's right. And, or the angelic, archangels, and the masters, mm-hmm. which the master is someone who's like a Buddha, who even wanted to incarnate, he cannot, because actually living in the physical body is very limiting.
Mm-hmm.
So...
And this energy that's coming in, I saw it on YouTube the other day, this energy coming in has affected every single planet in the solar system in a very profound way. You might want to look it up on YouTube, but like Mercury has an atmosphere now, and every single planet has been affected by this energy coming in.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And the solar flares that just happened on March mm-hmm. 18th, that was the biggest solar flares, and it's happening all the time. And basically what we can do as human beings on this planet is clean our... prepare the vehicle, you know, clear all these beliefs out of our body, learn mm-hmm. how to ground consciousness, and learn how to be able to contain the universe in the body. Because that was my experience. Mm-hmm. If I hadn't done all the meditation, I wouldn't have been able to contain the experience in mm-hmm. this little body. So that's the only thing we can do as human beings. And then once we recognize that I'm not the doer, once we recognize mm-hmm. that I'm just a vehicle through which things happen, then there's the real trust, then there's the real let go, then there's the real welcome of that they that those higher energies, the forces, the higher consciousness to come and do the work through us, because in order for us to do the pure work, we must be pure inside.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that whole work of purification is a very important work. And again, coming back to my system called the Dalian Method, mm-hmm. that basically is a system that in very short time can start purifying the body very quickly. And I feel that now we're in a time of quickening, have been in a time of quickening for a while now, but then we need to provide new methods for the new generation that is coming after us and right now. So this is like a brand new system that is offered, the way I see it, for generations mm-hmm. to come, because they need faster ways. They need to they don't need to carry all the baggage from the generations before them. And a lot mm-hmm. of people now that I've been working with, they're just cutting those old chains. This just
right.
old generational change in the patterns, mm-hmm. because by doing that, by those few people choosing to do that, they're helping generations before them and generations after them to be liberated. And we have mm-hmm. to start living. We have to become new kind of species in a way. And this is the whole work. This is the whole work of how can we become that. And it is said that the age of enlightenment, it basically, you know, there's no dispute about that. Even I can say with my vision, I can confirm that it's there. It's here. It's around the corner. And of course, what's 100 years is just a blip in mm-hmm. the cosmic time frame. But what's going to happen on the planet, then the lower type of vibration will not be allowed to be incarnated here. So that mm-hmm. so that whatever that lower incarnation of destruction comes in, it needs to be cleared, because this is a beautiful planet and we need mm-hmm. to start living. We have to have that experience of living in that purity of intent, in the purity of the soul, the purity of the spirit, so we can mm-hmm. just create, because the creation, there's so much to create, and that's where joy is. Joy equals creation.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Well, we're coming up at the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
My website has a lot of information, actually. It's madadalian.com, M-A-D-A-D-A-L-I-A-N .com, and has the books and the system. And as a matter of fact, if I have time, I'd like to mention that I'm currently working on the version for teenagers of the system,
really?
Which will be shorter. So the adult version is 78-74 minutes. The teen version will be about 25 minutes. And then mm-hmm. I have the child version, which is about 15 minutes. So then this system is like designed to help the different age groups, depending on what their needs mm-hmm. are, to work quickly through transformation, basically. Yeah.
Right. Well, are there any other, inspirational messages you'd like to give the audience before we conclude the interview?
The main inspirational message is don't waste any time. Start looking in and
okay.
doing your work, because the sooner people do that and the sooner they embrace all the ideas that they think are bad and look to see why do I have these ideas and transform them, the sooner they can start enjoying their life. And that's what we need. We need more joy we need more celebration on this planet. I think we've seen enough wars, we've seen enough suffering. And it's mm-hmm. now, let's bring in more dance and let's bring in more, you know, joy and celebration. And I think that's what this planet needs now.
Well, thank you.
Well, we've been interviewing Mata Dalian, her book In Search of the Miraculous, Healing into Consciousness. She also has a healing method that can help undo the negative belief systems and the baggage that you no longer need, that you can let loose of and go into, like she says, the miraculous and into joy and into creativity, which is really where we're supposed to be. We're not supposed to be slaves of a system that is fear-based and a prison planet, so to speak. We're supposed to be on a much happier journey. Thank you very much, Bada. It's been a great interview.
Yeah, thank you very much, Susan. I always enjoy talking to you.
Well, great. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.